Brandon was a young 6-year-old boy. He had got up early in the morning and he had decided that since his parents were still in the bed, he was going to make them pancakes. He really wanted to do this thing he had heard of called breakfast in bed. He thought it would mean a lot to his parents and it was a sweet gesture. And so he pulled up a chair to the counter and began to climb up to get some flour out of the cabinet. And he reached up and he pulled on the flour and just couldn't quite get the grip he needed, and it fell down and bursted, and flour went on the counter and the floor, and what a mess. But he scrounged up what he thought would be enough to make these pancakes, and he put them in a bowl, very, very smart. And he remembered that his parents would use milk when they would make breakfast. So he went into the fridge and reached up and grabbed that milk, and he began to try to pour that milk into that bowl, and it was heavy, and some of it went in the bowl and some of it sloshed over to the side and began to run down the cabinets. And then he remembered eggs. And so he went to go and get some eggs out of the refrigerator, and as he was coming back, their cat had jumped up on the counter and began to drink that milk out of that bowl. And out of reaction, he dropped the eggs and went to get the cat out of the bowl, and the eggs hit the ground and eggs splattered everywhere. And he began to look at this mess that he had created, and he began to get very nervous because he knew that he was going to be in big trouble for what he had just done. And it hit him that it just might so happen somebody could have heard that. And he turned around, and sure enough, his dad was standing there in the doorway of the kitchen watching this unfold. Tears began to fill Brandon's eyes as he knew what was about to come. For sure he was going to get a spanking. It was all over for him. And the dad came up and he picked up this little messy boy into his arms and said, "Brandon," he said, "you know, your mother's still in the bed. Do you suppose that if you and I did this together that we could still make some pancakes?" And Brandon's, his emotion, his face completely changed. He wiped the tears and he said, "Dad, I suppose that you and I could do anything together." I love that story because it reminds me of the fact that we as human beings, we do sometimes the things that we have the best intention and we want to do right and we want to do well, but we just make a mess of it. We just make a mess of things sometimes. But we have a Father who, when He picks us up in our arms, at our lowest points, and says to us, almost whispers in our ear, that together we can accomplish this. Together we can be clean and we can turn this mess into something that's wonderful. I think about the Corinthian brethren when I think about making a mess. When you read through that letter, especially beginning in chapter 5 of 1 Corinthians, the Corinthian brethren had mess after mess after mess that needed to be cleaned up. Chapter 5, you've got the sexual immorality that was taking place with this man and his father's wife, and the mess that was going on, and they were puffed up about it even, as you remember, and there needed to be a withdrawal. What a mess. Chapter 6, they're suing one another, taking their own brethren to court before a secular judge. What a mess. Chapter 7, these marriages and these questions, these issues that are arising, and people are leaving and separating, and they're questioning what they should do and how to handle these situations. What a mess. Chapter 8, they're discouraging weaker, less knowledgeable brethren. They're ruining their conscience. They're negatively affecting them with their poor example, doing things that the weaker brethren, quote-unquote, are not comfortable with. What a mess. Chapter 11, they're eating, they're partaking of the Lord's Supper as if it was just a fellowship meal. Just eating it in their houses. And Paul basically says in verse 22, "I don't have anything positive to say about this. Nothing positive to say to you." And then we get to chapters 12, 13, and 14. And by the way, if you'd like to be turning there and you would like an outline of this lesson, that in essence will be that outline. Chapters 12, 13, and 14 of 1 Corinthians. But we get there and then we get to this situation where these men, and they're speaking in tongues, and they're arrogant about it. They're parading themselves before the congregations. They want to use the tongues whether it's beneficial or not. And so Paul wants to show them a better way. He wants them, in essence, chapter 13 is the foundation of all of this book, because it will solve every mess they had created from chapters 5 on. Every one of them, if they will attempt to obey 1 Corinthians chapter 13. In just a moment, I will, of course, meet you there. But before we do, I want to talk about this. Number one, I'd like to do a series. Sunday mornings, for at least 3, if not 4 weeks on this topic. Because as you get into this subject and you go through all of these details about love, you just can't do that in one sermon. And I try to do that way too much. So I'm going to give myself a few weeks, and not too many, but a few weeks, to focus on a topic that is very misunderstood in our day and age. When we talk about love, what do we mean? That's what we're going to talk about. But when you think about 1 Corinthians 13, it's interesting because when you have, I've been blessed to do several weddings, and it's sometimes when you're asking, not just with me, any preacher might ask a couple, what verse, is there any verse, and every preacher will ask this question, is there any verse in particular you want me to read when we're going through the ceremony? You probably could guess what one of, if not the most popular, passages to be read in a wedding is. It's 1 Corinthians 13. And it's interesting because they'll reference it as a beautiful chapter, a refreshing chapter. Oh, it's wonderful. Now, truth be told, if you do it, if you obey 1 Corinthians 13, then your marriage will be perfect. There will never be any issues. You will be a perfect Christian. In fact, you will be closer to being God than anyone else ever has. 1 Corinthians 13 could arguably be stated to be the most difficult chapter in the Bible to obey. There's nothing pretty, if you will, about this chapter, because it is a major correction that needs to take place in every one of the Corinthian brethren's lives and ours. If we go through this chapter as we're going to, Lord willing, in the next few weeks, there's nobody in this congregation, certainly not myself, who will not be guilty of one of these 15 verbs. It is not easy to do. It is not beautiful to think about the struggle to be the loving Christian that we ought to be. But if we do it, and we won't do it perfectly, but if we do, that is, of course, beautiful. But this is a difficult thing, and it is important to understand. But boy, do we need to. Look at chapter 14. If you have your Bibles, hopefully you're already there. 1 Corinthians. Let's begin in chapter 14, the end of this, the last chapter of this kind of section on spiritual gifts, and get an idea as to what's going on. Verse 5, Paul says, I would that ye all spake with tongues, but rather that ye prophesied. Notice this, for greater is he that prophesieth than he that speaketh with tongues, except he interpret, that the church may receive edifying. When you and I read this, it doesn't get under our skin. This doesn't bother us that we don't need to be speaking in tongues. We don't have that ability, and so we're not really worried about that particular command as far as us speaking in tongues without an interpreter. We're not going to do that. But if you were in the first century in Corinth, and you had the ability to speak in tongues, especially with their attitude, this would get under your skin. Paul, you're telling me, these guys were speaking in tongues as the prophecies would pray in public. They wanted people to see them. They had an awesome ability, and they wanted to get recognition for it. And yet Paul says to them, it's better that you prophesy. No, Paul. There's no way. These tongues, these are incredible gifts. You don't know what you're talking about, Paul. And Paul would say to them, no, you don't understand. You don't understand that it's not about you. It is about what is best for the body. It's about what's best for the church, not about what you want for people to see or for people to think about you. And so he says, I would rather that ye prophesy. Look at verse 12. Verse 12, even so ye, for as much as ye are zealous of spiritual gifts. Now I want you to notice that Paul is never going to discourage spiritual gifts. It's not that it's a negative thing to have these gifts and to use them. And as we apply them, by the way, I want you to think about our abilities, our talents that we've been blessed with, that we use for the betterment of the kingdom. That's the application ultimately from this. He says, you're zealous of spiritual gifts, and that's great. You tongue speakers, that is great that you're zealous and excited and on fire, but seek that you may excel to the edifying of the church. That's the problem. See that you use it with the right motivation, L-O-V-E. You're motivated by love, not about self-interest and self-desires. A love for the brethren. Verse 18, I thank my God. Notice Paul says, I speak with tongues more than ye all. I'm sure they loved that. Paul says, in essence, I've been doing this a lot longer than you have, and I'm doing it a lot more effectively than you are. But, verse 19, even so, in the church, I'd rather speak 5 words with my understanding, that by my voice I might teach others also than 10,000 words in an unknown tongue. What a statement. I would rather say 5 words and they understand what I'm saying than to show off with 10,000 words in a tongue. I'm sure they were not enjoying reading this, being tongue speakers and being arrogant about it. But let's look at chapter 12. Back up. We're setting up the beginning and the end of what's going on in chapter 13. If I want to understand that love chapter, as we call it, I've got to know what's going on around it. Chapter 12, verse 7. He had already told them before getting into this, he says, the manifestation of the Spirit is given to every man. All of the gifts are given. Notice the end of verse 7, to profit you individually. That's not what it says, is it? It was given to you as individuals to profit with all, to profit everybody. Same would be true of our talents, our abilities. They're given to us to better and further the entire kingdom, not just our own self-interest. Jump down to verse 21. Verse 21. Can you imagine somebody actually thinking, and I hope that none of us would ever have this attitude, but actually thinking that, you know, I'm so good at this particular aspect of the worship that nobody else is even needed. I should just always be the song leader because I rock at it. I'm the best one by far. All the other song leaders are not needed. I hope that's not the attitude. I'm so good at leading prayers. All these other guys that are leading prayers, they just don't feel it like I do. It's just not there, right? This attitude. Verse 21, it's like the eye cannot say to the hand, I have no need of thee. Nor again the head to the feet, I have no need of you. Can the eye really say to the hand, you're worthless. All this body needs is some eyes. We don't really need a hand. We don't need those other abilities, right? I can take care of everything that needs to get done. We don't need that, right? We know we need the hand. What would we be without the hand? Sure, you've got good eyes, but this hand is going to do a lot. Verse 25, for time's sake. That there be no schism in the body, but that the members should have the same care one for another. The members should have the same care one for another. In our eyes, it ought to be like it is in God's eyes. Every member is just as important as another. From the newest Christian to the longest reigning elder, if I can put it that way, every one of them is just as important as the other in God's eyes. And we've got to view it that way. We've got to view one another that way. And that's not always easy. And not to mention, we haven't even began to discuss what it even means to love one another. But we will, Lord willing. Verse 31. One more piece of introduction here. Verse 31. I want you to notice the bookends of chapter 13. Chapter 12, verse 31, the last verse of chapter 12, and verse 1 of chapter 14. The men who divided this up did a great job in this particular section. The bookend, the beginning, on the left side, if you're picturing this case, says this, this is chapter 12, 31, but covet earnestly the best gifts, and yet I show unto you a more excellent. Paul's not saying here, don't use your spiritual gifts, don't use your talents, they're not neat. That's not what he's saying. Covet those gifts, use them, but I'm going to show you a better motive, a better motivation, a better way to use those gifts that will make them much more effective. You're using your talents in the church, that's wonderful. But Paul says, let me show you a better way to use them. In fact, he would have been accurate to say the only effective way to use them, as he will in a moment. Chapter 14 and verse 1, he ends it describing this whole chapter to us and all that we're going to note shortly. Chapter 14, verse 1, follow, pursue after love, after charity, and desire spiritual gifts. Again, there it is, desire them, but rather that you may prophesy, because that's what's going to edify. So pursue it. You remember being in school, guys especially, and you had that sweetheart that you just had your eyes on and you pursued her. You did all that you could to win her over. He says, pursue. Ladies, you did the same thing. Maybe there was that. Pursue love, right? Embody love. Take hold of love. Chase after it. Make it at the forefront of your mind always. Now, I want to pause another moment here to introduce another thought that I think is very significant. God is not and was not ashamed to give a ranking system, if I may put it that way, to love. that, believe it or not, there is a command that God says is more important than any other. Right? When we think of sin, it doesn't work that way. Sin is sin. There's willful and unwillful sin, but as far as the sin itself, whether you're telling a lie or murdering, it's all the same in God's eyes. But that is not true of one command on the positive side. There's one thing that God says, if you will embody this, in essence, the rest is going to fall into place. There's one command that is above all. 1 John, for example, 4 or 5 verses I'll give you and we'll move on. 1 John 4 and verse 8, right? He that loveth not knoweth not God. For God is, literally the embodiment of, He is, God equals love. He that loveth not knoweth not God. Question, and of course don't answer out loud, but thinking in your own minds, how important is love? It is as important as it is to know God. If it is important to know God, and that is the most important thing in this world, is to know God and His will, and if that's the case, then that is the equivalent to how important it is to love. Because God is love. Knowing love is knowing God. I'm so sorry. Let me move this over. I know that's distracting. I don't know if that'll be any better or not, but God is love. That's what He is. So to know love is to know God. To not know love, to not be motivated by love, is to not know Him. Turn with me, put your marker, and I'll do the same, in 1 Corinthians 13, and go with me to Matthew 22. You're very familiar with this passage, but I want you to look at it in a way that maybe you haven't, at least not recently. Matthew 22, beginning in verse 36. Matthew 22, beginning in verse 36. This is when the lawyer asks Jesus. He's a lawyer. He's interested in law. And so he asks the question, Master, which is the great commandment in the law? What's the greatest commandment? If you had to pick one to prioritize it above all, without any hesitation, Jesus says to him, Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. Sometimes we call it the greatest command. He literally means what you think He means when He makes that statement. It's not first in the sense of it came before the other commands. It is ranked above all. It is God's number one, the most important commandment is to love the Lord. Everything else comes from that. Everything else that you obey, that you do, comes from, is seeded from, in a sense, loving God. In fact, He says, I'll just go ahead and give you a second command to show you. Look at verse 39. The second, even being likened to it, He says, Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Love your neighbor as yourself. Now, do I get to choose how to love my neighbor as myself? Do I get to decide what that means? No, because the first commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, all your strength. Love Him with all of your being. Because of that, I don't get to decide how to love my neighbor. I go to God and I say, God, how is it because I love You, how is it that I should treat my neighbor? Let me make this practical. Your neighbor is, hopefully this is not the case, but let's just say you've got one of those neighbors. You do not like your neighbor. You do not get along. Your neighbor's always complaining. You just accidentally grazed his grass. How could you? Maybe it's the silliest thing. Who knows? But you and your neighbor just don't get along. He is a wicked, evil neighbor, and I wish I didn't live by him. Maybe that's the case. But question, do you get to decide how you treat that neighbor? If we decided, we probably wouldn't be very nice to that neighbor. Because naturally, the flesh says, I want to be ugly back. I don't want to be nice to that guy or that girl. She's or he is very rude to me on a constant basis. Here's the point. We don't treat people the way we do because of who they are. We treat people the way we do because that's the point here in Matthew 22. Love your neighbor as yourself. I don't dictate that. I go to my neighbor and I don't treat them the way that I do because of who they are, but because of who he or she is. If I did, I wouldn't be very nice because they're not nice. But I treat them the way I do, hopefully in a loving way, because that's... I go to God and I say, God, how do You want me to treat my neighbor? He says, I want You to love him. I want You to do good to him. I want You to be kind to him, to be merciful, to be forgiving. And we would say, God, that's not natural. That's not what I would want to do. But if You love me, God would say, then that's what You're going to do. Everything flows from the greatest, the most important command. A couple more verses, and I'll go through this a little quicker. Galatians 5:22, the fruit of the Spirit. An apple tree produces apples. An orange tree produces oranges. A fruit of the Spirit, or a spirit tree, if we might call it that, if that is in our lives, what we're embodying, that fruit produces the first one in that list, love. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. But the first one mentioned, and not by accident, is love. Sometimes think about those other fruits of the Spirit or parts of that fruit, right? And think about the fact that all of them are going to take care of themselves if we've got that first one. Joy, peace, they'll be there if we really embody that first one. And we'll see why a little bit later. Colossians 3, beginning in verse 12. He's just got done in chapter 2 talking about putting on Christ, having the remission of sin, spiritual circumcision. And in chapter 3, he talks about what you should put off as well. Put off these things. But when you get to verse 12, he says, put on tender mercies. Put on kindness. Even forgiveness. But then he says in verse 14, above all these things, above them all, put on love. God, you're telling me that there is something greater than forgiveness? There's something greater than forgiving my brethren when they do me wrong. God would say, you know, I'm not belittling. He's not belittling at all forgiveness or kindness or tender mercies, any of those things. But there's something that's even greater, and that is love. Colossians chapter 3. 1 Corinthians 13. Let's go back to it. 1 Corinthians chapter 13. I'm telling you what, that thing is sensitive. 1 Corinthians 13, I'm trying to clear it up. I just can't do it. Verse 13, you remember the passage. Now abideth faith, hope, and love, but the greatest of these is love. Paul says the very thing in chapter 13. We call it the love chapter, and naturally he mentions that the greatest is love. Faith is important. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. Hebrews 11:6. Without hope, Romans 8:24, there's no salvation. But love is still greater. That's so interesting. It's so intriguing to me. And in chapter 16, if you want to notice, if you want to take note of it very quickly there, chapter 16, verse 13 and 14, where he talks about, quit ye like men, be strong, stand fast in the faith. But again, above all, love. Put on charity. Put on love. That's the most important. All right, let me go to chapter 13, verse 1. Let's get into it for a moment. I'm going to skip this part here. This is just kind of an outline, but it's not near as important as using my time in verses 1 through 3. Let's jump right to it. Verses 1 through 3. And the lesson will be yours. Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels and have not love, I am become as sounding brass or a tinkling cymbal. I remember being in middle school, I believe it was sixth grade, and I decided, for whatever reason, I decided I was going to be a trumpet player. And I took that trumpet home, bless my parents' hearts, and I played. We had a very little small house at the time, and I picked that thing up, and for some reason, I could make a sound on it. It was kind of neat. It didn't sound good, but unfortunately for my parents, it did come out as a sound. And probably within 12 seconds, they said to me, you're going to have to do that outside. And so I went outside. It was terrible. You can't even imagine. I went outside, no joke, probably 200 yards or so away. We had a barn with some mules. And I began to make noise on that instrument, and all of those mules began to bray. Every time that I would go out there and play, those mules would bray. That's not a good sign. If you've heard a professional trumpet player, it doesn't sound like a mule braying, but I was speaking their language. What's the point? Paul says, you can speak with tongues, and he says, I'll one-up you. You can speak with the tongues of angels, which nobody's ever done, at least not recorded. He says, even if you could speak with the tongues of angels, if you don't do it with love, he says, you are that braying mule, as I would put it. You're that sounding trumpet, a sounding brass, or just the bang of a cymbal. Absolutely for nothing. Verse 2 here. Keep going with me. Verse 2, very quickly. And though I have the gift of prophecy, understanding all mysteries and all knowledge, and have faith that could move mountains, and have not love, I am nothing. You think of a man. Think of a man who has the gift of prophecy. Wouldn't that be neat to have the gift of prophecy? You'd ask me, Dalton, where'd you get the idea for your sermon? It just came to me. I was standing up here and it just came to me. Study hard this week? Nope. No, I didn't. I guess any preacher would love to have that gift of prophecy. But let's say you have a man that does right now, not me, but let's say he was right here. He had the gift of prophecy. He had knowledge, all knowledge. He knew all the mysteries. All the mysteries. I wish we could talk about that. We don't have time. All the mysteries of the Bible. Any questions you have, he knows it. Let's say, and nobody ever did, by the way, in the first century, but Paul says, even if you did have a man like this, and he had a faith that could make, let's pretend there was a mountain right here, that just could move it out of the way. We saw the Smoky Mountains. Let's say he could move the Smoky Mountains. That would be an incredible man. We would think to ourselves, this has got to be the godliest man of all time. But God says, if he doesn't have love, he's nothing. We would think he was incredible, but in God's eyes, he would be nothing. Are you beginning to see the importance of being motivated by love? Last verse, verse 3. Though I bestow all goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned and have not love, it profits me nothing. We have a giving. Let's say we have a giving today, and you are asked to give everything that you have save the clothes on your back. We'll make an exception to this. You get to keep your clothes on your back. Other than that, you give everything that you have. You don't have a house to go home to. You have no vehicle to drive home. You've given it all up. What a godly person, right? I mean, you just gave everything. That would be instant heaven, wouldn't it? God says, if you didn't do that out of love, you wasted your time. You mean to tell me a person can give everything they have and it be for naught? Absolutely. And then he says this, and no doubt culminating and summing up and making the point clearer than he already has. You can be a martyr. You can burn at the stake and not deny Christ and still be lost for eternity. I mean, surely we would think to ourselves, if I don't deny Christ and I burn alive for his cause, I'll be instantly in heaven, right? Not if you don't do that for love. I don't know why else you would do that, but Paul says if you did it for any other reason other than love, you would have wasted your time. There is nothing more important than using our gifts, using our abilities and talents, and doing so in love, doing it for the right reason. Let me jump ahead here. I got behind on my PowerPoint. I apologize to Glenn back there, but I'm probably giving him a hard time. But he takes care of all this for us online. This is the end of the conclusion of this lesson, and I'll hush. Life minus love. Simple math. Life minus love equals nothing. Zero. That's the point of this introduction. If you don't have this love that we're going to talk about next week, Lord willing, as to what exactly that love is and how to have it, because I don't know about you, in doing this study and thinking about this, I want to know what true biblical love is, because if I don't embody it, then I have nothing. So, so very important. I hope that you'll be thinking about being and having this love this week, and we'll talk about it more next week. Maybe it is that you're here this morning and you've not loved as you should. You haven't. I'm not talking about a feel-good kind. I'm talking about being to others as Christ was to others. I'm talking about being a servant. Talking about making sacrifices, denying self, not promoting and showing off how good I am at what I do, but doing things because I love the Lord. And everything else I do, every relationship I have in the workplace, every phone call I make to those folks that charged me when they shouldn't have, every conversation I have, everything that I do, motivated by Jesus' love. That's what it's all. Maybe I haven't done that. Maybe I need to make that correction in my life to do better. Maybe it is that you would like us to pray with you and for you. We'd love to do so and encourage you. Maybe you, like Miss Burke last week, maybe you recognize that you're missing something. You need to be baptized into Christ for the remission of your sins. We would love to assist you in that this morning. You're eligible to do that if you believe, if you have that faith that Jesus is the Son of God, that He came to this earth and died for you. If you're willing to repent, that's a big decision, to turn away from sin and to live for Christ, and to confess with your mouth that Jesus is the Son of God, something you'll do hopefully as a faithful Christian for the rest of your days. If we can assist you in any way to make sure that you love the Lord because He loves you, and nothing would make Him happier than for you to come forward and to show that you love Him back if you need to do so. Come forward right now, if the need be, as we stand and sing together.